Welcome back. This is episode 19 of Sermons, and we're going to try to finish up the book of Genesis this time, believe it or not. We're up to chapter 47, verse 27, which says, "And Israel dwelt in the land of Egypt, in the country of Goshen, and they had possessions therein, and grew and multiplied exceedingly." Now, notice it says Israel dwelt in the land of Egypt. And Israel up to this point has been singular, arguably, every time we've encountered it. It was the new name that the Yahwehians assigned to Jacob. But here it seems to be plural. It says Israel dwelt in the land of Egypt and they had possessions therein. So it's definitely plural in this case. "And Jacob lived in the land of Egypt 17 years, so the whole age of Jacob was 147 years. And the time drew nigh that Israel must die." We're back to the singular Israel here. "And he called his son Joseph and said unto him, If now I have found grace in thy sight, put, I pray thee, thy hand under my thigh, and deal kindly and truly with me. Bury me not, I pray thee, in Egypt." Now, we've seen this ritual before. Back in the old days, I guess they didn't have Bibles for people to swear on, so they swore on people's backsides instead. "But I will lie with my fathers, and thou shalt carry me out of Egypt, and bury me in their burying place. And he said, I will do as thou hast said. And he said, Swear unto me. And he sware unto him. And Israel bowed himself upon the bed's head." So, what does it mean that he bowed himself upon the bed's head? Well, I picture him slumping back on his pillow, if they used pillows back then, I don't know, so that his head tilted forward, you know, onto his chest, his chin resting on his chest. It sounds reasonable to me, but it's not the only reasonable interpretation. Ancient Hebrew was written without any vowels, kind of like that speed writing shorthand that you used to see ads for that said, if you can read this, you can get a good job, or something like that. You know, leaving out the vowels out of most of the words, unless they were the words were themselves a vowel sound, in which case you would use a vowel. It's like it started out, if you would be F-U. anyway, and read would be R-D. So Yahweh, for instance, in the Hebrew version of speed writing, would have been written Y-H-W-H, or, you know, the equivalent in Hebrew consonants. The word for bed, Hamateh, was written H-M-T-H, or the equivalent. But the word for staff, Hamatah, was also written H-M-T-H, or the equivalent. So, some translations, instead of saying he bowed on the head of his bed, say that he leaned on the top of his staff. After all, it hadn't said anything before this about him being in bed, in this particular scene. So it just depends on what you think the context implies. And if you're going to take the Bible literally, remember it isn't always clear what the Bible is literally saying. I personally favor the bed interpretation because it's a whole lot easier to put your hand under some old man's thigh if he's lying down, or at least sitting down on the edge of his bed. If you try it while he's standing up, you might cause him to fall and break a hip. Now we're up to chapter 48. "And it came to pass after these things that one told Joseph, Behold, thy father is sick. And he took with him his two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim. And one told Jacob and said, Behold, thy son Joseph cometh unto thee. And Israel strengthened himself and sat upon the bed." So he does sit on the bed in this case. "And Jacob said unto Joseph, God Almighty appeared unto me at Luz in the land of Canaan, and blessed me, and said unto me, Behold, I will make thee fruitful, and multiply thee, and I will make of thee a multitude of people, and will give this land to thy seed after thee for an everlasting possession. And now thy two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, which were born unto thee in the land of Egypt before I came unto thee into Egypt, are mine. As Reuben and Simeon, they shall be mine. And thy issue, which thou begettest after them, shall be thine, and shall be called after the name of their brethren in their inheritance. And as for me, when I came from Paddan, Rachel died by me in the land of Canaan in the way, when yet there was but a little way to come unto Ephrath, and I buried her there in the way of Ephrath, the same as Bethlehem. And Israel beheld Joseph's sons and said, Who are these? And Joseph said unto his father, They are my sons, whom God hath given me in this place. And he said, Bring them, I pray thee, unto me, and I will bless them. Now the eyes of Israel were dim for age, so that he could not see. And he brought them near unto him, and he kissed them and embraced them. And Israel said unto Joseph, I had not thought to see thy face, and lo, God hath shewed me also thy seed. And Joseph brought them out from between his knees, and he bowed himself with his face to the earth. And Joseph took them both, Ephraim in his right hand toward Israel's left hand, and Manasseh in his left hand toward Israel's right hand, and brought them near unto him. And Israel stretched out his right hand and laid it upon Ephraim's head, who was the younger, and his left hand upon Manasseh's head, guiding his hands wittingly, for Manasseh was the firstborn. And he blessed Joseph and said, God, before whom my fathers Abraham and Isaac did walk, the God which fed me all my life long unto this day, the angel which redeemed me from all evil, bless the lads, and let my name be named on them, and the name of my fathers Abraham and Isaac, and let them grow into a multitude in the midst of the earth. And when Joseph saw that his father laid his right hand upon the head of Ephraim, it displeased him. And he held up his father's hand to remove it from Ephraim's head unto Manasseh's head. And Joseph said unto his father, Not so, my father, for this is the firstborn. Put thy right hand upon his head. And his father refused and said, I know it, my son, I know it. He also shall become a people, and he also shall be great, but truly his younger brother shall be greater than he, and his seed shall become a multitude of nations. Now evidently Israel, or Jacob, whatever you want to call him, was partial to the second son in general, since that's what he was. You know, remember he had an older brother, Esau, well, an older twin, actually, that he had cheated out of both the birthright and the blessing that he was entitled to. So I guess he figured he'd continue that tradition. And he blessed them that day, saying, In thee shall Israel bless, saying, God make thee as Ephraim and as Manasseh. And he set Ephraim before Manasseh. And Israel said unto Joseph, Behold, I die, but God shall be with you and bring you again unto the land of your fathers. Moreover, I have given to thee one portion above thy brethren, which I took out of the hand of the Amorite with my sword and with my bow. So he's given two portions to Joseph, basically one for Ephraim and one for Manasseh. And out of his ill-gotten gains, he's given him that double portion, probably as repayment for the kickbacks that he received when he bought surplus grain from Egypt. Now, why anybody thinks that these biblical patriarchs were morally upright individuals is beyond me, because Joseph was a corrupt politician who embezzled, you know, to benefit his own family. You know, he kicked back the money to them that they paid for the wheat, and all the Egyptians had to pay for their wheat or grain, whatever kind of grain it was. You know, and it wasn't just him. His brothers were schemers and slave traders, among other things. And his father, you know, cheated any and everybody, even his own brother. Before that, there was Lot. And he had a threesome with two of his own daughters. And Lot's uncle, Abraham, when he was younger, he'd been ready to follow orders to murder his own son. Before that, there was Noah, who liked to get drunk and sleep in the nude, which scandalized his sons no end. And before that, there was Cain, who invented fratricide, and his parents, Adam and Eve, who were, you know, prone to pointing the finger at others rather than taking responsibility for their own actions. Makes you wonder what it was about these hooligans that qualified them to be the chosen people. I guess it had something to do with their DNA. You know, which would make sense, because that DNA may very well have been what inspired their evil ways, because the Yahwehlians were no paragons of virtue by any means. They had created humans to be a slave race for them, which is, you know, certainly ethically questionable. And when the humans didn't turn out to be easily controllable, they didn't know whether to euthanize them or release them into the wild. But, you know, once they were released and several generations had been fruitful and multiplied, then they thought better of it and decided to genocide them all by drowning. But that didn't work out as planned either, because one or more of them didn't go along with it. And on and on. So the human nuts didn't fall too far from the alien tree, if you know what I mean. And now we're up to chapter 49. And Jacob called unto his sons and said, "Gather yourselves together, that I may tell you that which shall befall you in the last days. Gather yourselves together and hear, ye sons of Jacob, and hearken unto Israel your father. Reuben, thou art my firstborn, my might, and the beginning of my strength, the excellency of dignity and the excellency of power. Unstable as water, thou shalt not excel, because thou wentest up to thy father's bed, then defiledst thou it. He went up to my couch." He's addressing the rest of them now. He's explaining what he just said. And he's denying the firstborn his birthright again. Why would he do that? Or what excuse does he have for doing that anyway? Back in chapter 35, Reuben had got it on with Bilhah, one of Jacob's concubines. I forget whether she was Leah's or Rachel's maid. But that's what that stuff about defiling his father's bed is all about. Then he moves on to the other brothers. Simeon and Levi are brethren. Instruments of cruelty are in their habitations. O my soul, come not thou into their secret, unto their assembly, mine honor. Be not thou united, for in their anger they slew a man, and in their self-will they digged down a wall. Now, this digged down a wall thing is puzzling, but it's probably a mistranslation. Other versions say that they hamstrung oxen instead of digging down a wall, and they also slew men, plural, not just a singular man. And this probably refers back to when Jacob's sons took revenge for Shechem defiling their sister Dinah. Remember, Shechem wanted to marry Dinah. He had defiled her and decided he liked it, and so he wanted to marry her. And Jacob's sons tricked the men of Shechem's city into undergoing circumcision. And while they were still sore from that and laid up in their beds, Jacob's sons went in and slew them with the sword. So, you know, they were a bunch of hooligans too. Put them on that same list with all the other moral reprobates. Cursed be their anger, for it was fierce, and their wrath, for it was cruel. I will divide them in Jacob, and scatter them in Israel. Judah, thou art he whom thy brethren shall praise. Thy hand shall be in the neck of thine enemies. Thy father's children shall bow down before thee. Judah is a lion's whelp. From the prey, my son, thou art gone up. He stooped down, and he couched as a lion, and as an old lion, who shall rouse him up? The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet, until Shiloh come. And unto him shall the gathering of the people be. Now, this Shiloh business is confusing, too, but the consensus seems to be that it probably refers to the Messiah, which I don't believe had even been predicted at this point or even mentioned. But at any rate, Judah is the first son that Jacob has been remotely positive about, and I guess really he was the best of a bad lot, at least of Joseph's older half-brothers. Binding his foal unto the vine, and his ass's colt unto the choice vine, he washed his garments in wine, and his clothes in blood of grapes. His eyes shall be red with wine, and his teeth white with milk. So Judah and his descendants are going to prosper in a land where there's plenty of grapes to make wine. If you get tired of drinking wine, there'll be plenty of milk too, probably honey as well. And now he goes on to make predictions about the other brothers and their descendants, which I don't want to spend too much time on since they're kind of obscure. Zebulun shall dwell at the haven of the sea, and he shall be for an haven of ships, and his border shall be unto Zidon. Issachar is a strong ass couching down between two burdens. And he saw that rest was good, and the land that it was pleasant, and bowed his shoulder to bear, and became a servant unto tribute. Dan shall judge his people as one of the tribes of Israel. Dan shall be a serpent by the way, an adder in the path, that biteth the horse heels, so that his rider shall fall backward. Now, I don't know what kind of reaction all this stuff got back then, but nowadays, we'd probably just chalk it up to dementia. the old man's talking out of his head again. I have waited for thy salvation, O Lord. Gad, a troop shall overcome him, but he shall overcome at the last. Out of Asher his bread shall be fat, and he shall yield royal dainties. Naphtali is a hind let loose, he giveth goodly words. And now Jacob finally gets around to his favorite sons, Joseph and Benjamin. Or, I should say, Yaakov gets around to Yosef and Binyamin. And along these same lines, I should have already mentioned that Judah could be more correctly pronounced Yehuda, which provides the answer to the musical question, who's Yehuda? Well, Yehudi, Yehuda, same thing. Just depends on which vowels you choose to insert between those Hebrew consonants. We need to remember always that the Bible was not written in English or even in modern Hebrew, which, modern Hebrew uses kind of a dot code underneath the consonants to indicate what vowels to insert between them. And sometimes even the consonants are ambiguous. That's how come the same name can be pronounced either Yahweh or Jehovah. See, the German scholars used to use a J to represent the Y sound in Yahweh, because a J is pronounced as a Y in German, like in Jawohl, mein Führer. Jawohl, Yahweh, see? And to an English speaker who doesn't know either Hebrew or German very well, and if you've only got the consonants to go by, Yahweh looks like it could be pronounced Jehovah, depending on what vowels you put in between. Now, I don't know if it really happened that way, but it could have. Joseph is a fruitful bough, even a fruitful bough by a well, whose branches run over the wall. The archers have sorely grieved him and shot at him and hated him, but his bow abode in strength, and the arms of his hands were made strong by the hands of the mighty God of Jacob. From thence is the shepherd, the stone of Israel. Even by the God of thy father, who shall help thee, and by the Almighty, who shall bless thee with blessings of heaven above, blessings of the deep that lieth under, blessings of the breasts and of the womb. The blessings of thy father have prevailed above the blessings of my progenitors, unto the utmost bound of the everlasting hills. They shall be on the head of Joseph, and on the crown of the head of him that was separate from his brethren. Now he moves on to Benjamin. Benjamin shall raven as a wolf. In the morning he shall devour the prey, and at night he shall divide the spoil. And that's it about Benjamin. You know, after that long, glowing report on Joseph, you'd think Benjamin would have deserved something a little better than this. But, you know, even though he was one of Jacob's favorites, maybe Jacob realized that he had spoiled him after Joseph's disappearance, which would have been a natural thing to do since he was the youngest and the only remaining son of Jacob's favorite wife. So he would probably grow up thinking he was entitled to whatever he desired and would raven as a wolf, you know, devour the prey during the day and divide the spoil at night. All these are the 12 tribes of Israel, and this is it that their father spake unto them and blessed them. Everyone according to his blessing, he blessed them. And he charged them and said unto them, I am to be gathered unto my people. Bury me with my fathers in the cave that is in the field of Ephron the Hittite, in the cave that is in the field of Machpelah, which is before Mamre, in the land of Canaan, which Abraham bought with the field of Ephron the Hittite for a possession of a burying place. You remember all this, right? You should, if you've been listening to previous episodes. There they buried Abraham and Sarah, his wife. There they buried Isaac and Rebekah, his wife. And there I buried Leah. The purchase of the field and of the cave that is therein was from the children of Heth. And when Jacob had made an end of commanding his sons, he gathered up his feet into the bed and yielded up the ghost and was gathered unto his people. And now we're finally up to chapter 50, the last chapter of Genesis. Genesis, the final chapter. Bet you thought we'd never get here. And Joseph fell upon his father's face and wept upon him and kissed him. And Joseph commanded his servants, the physicians, to embalm his father. And the physicians embalmed Israel. The Egyptians were good at that, you know. And 40 days were fulfilled for him, for so are fulfilled the days of those which are embalmed. And the Egyptians mourned for him 60 days. And when the days of his mourning were past, Joseph spake unto the house of Pharaoh, saying, If now I have found grace in your eyes, speak, I pray you, in the ears of Pharaoh, saying, My father made me swear, saying, Lo, I die, in my grave which I have digged for me in the land of Canaan, there shalt thou bury me. Now therefore let me go up, I pray thee, and bury my father, and I will come again. And Pharaoh said, Go up and bury thy father, according as he made thee swear. And Joseph went up to bury his father, and with him went up all the servants of Pharaoh, the elders of his house, and all the elders of the land of Egypt, and all the house of Joseph, and his brethren, and his father's house. Only their little ones, and their flocks, and their herds they left in the land of Goshen. And there went up with him both chariots and horsemen, and it was a very great company. And they came to the threshing floor of Atad, which is beyond Jordan. And there they mourned with a great and very sore lamentation. And he made a mourning for his father 7 days. So what is this threshing floor? Do you remember an episode or two back we talked about bringing in the sheaves? The sheaves of grain, which I compared to bales of hay. Remember, bringing in the sheaves, hauling in the hay. So let's say these were sheaves of wheat, for instance. The threshing floor was where they would break open the sheaves, you know, cut the strings off the bales of hay, and separate the wheat from the chaff. Literally, not just so to speak. And when the inhabitants of the land, the Canaanites, saw the mourning in the floor of Atad, they said, "This is a grievous mourning to the Egyptians." Wherefore the name of it was called Abel Mizraim, which is beyond Jordan. And his sons did unto him according as he commanded them. For his sons carried him into the land of Canaan, and buried him in the cave of the field of Machpelah, which Abraham bought with the field for a possession of a burying place of Ephron the Hittite before Mamre, just in case you'd forgotten. And Joseph returned into Egypt, he and his brethren, and all that went up with him to bury his father, after he had buried his father. And when Joseph's brethren saw that their father was dead, they said, "Joseph will peradventure hate us, and will certainly requite us all the evil which we did unto him." And they sent a messenger unto Joseph, saying, "Thy father did command before he died, saying, So shall ye say unto Joseph, Forgive, I pray thee now, the trespass of thy brethren and their sin, for they did unto thee evil. And now, we pray thee, forgive the trespass of the servants of the God of thy father." Now, were they making that up? I don't remember anything like that. And Joseph wept when they spake unto him. And his brethren also went and fell down before his face, and they said, "Behold, we be thy servants." And Joseph said unto them, "Fear not, for am I in the place of God? But as for you, ye thought evil against me. But God meant it unto good, to bring to pass, as it is this day, to save much people alive." So the end justifies the means, I guess. Joseph was a commie, wasn't he? Yeah, he saved much people alive, so to speak, but they were free before that, more or less, and now they were serfs. "Now, therefore, fear ye not, I will nourish you and your little ones." And he comforted them and spake kindly unto them. And Joseph dwelt in Egypt, he and his father's house, and Joseph lived 110 years. And Joseph saw Ephraim's children of the third generation. The children also of Machir, the son of Manasseh, were brought up upon Joseph's knees. And Joseph said unto his brethren, "I die, and God will surely visit you, and bring you out of this land unto the land which he sware to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob." And Joseph took an oath of the children of Israel, saying, "God will surely visit you, and ye shall carry up my bones from hence." So Joseph died, being 110 years old, and they embalmed him, and he was put in a coffin in Egypt. Well, we've reached the end of Genesis, but don't worry. I'll be moving on to Exodus with the next regular episode of sermons. But before we get to that, I'm going to put out a special supersized retrospective called The Best of Genesis. Until then, keep the faith, even if you don't think the end justifies the means.